What is TWS podcast episode, whatever, who cares at this point?
The rants were vindicated.
It's my podcast and I do what I want to.
People, listen.
Word, is it still alive?
It's not working for me, Rich. We're gonna keep going.
I know I changed my voice at work.
Bars on the radio.
What is TWS podcast?
I'm ready.
I feel like the end is
staring at my watch and I'm feeling so new school.
Suicide attempts, how many tries to take?
They ain't ready.
All right, so we back. This is part two with Big Brother Ness. I feel like that's like a frat name. So I'm Big Brother Ness. Are you a fraternity?
I'm not Greek. Not Greek. No.
That surprises me. I thought for sure you'd be like a...
Well, I got another surprise for you then. I never even finished college.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Oh, that makes three of us.
We're in the same boat.
Yeah, my sister, although is as sharp as a whip, undergrad at UT, master's at UT, works at UT, was envious of her for a long time. Then I realized that God had blessed me with other talents, and that doesn't mean I'm not educated. It just means I chose not to do that. But a lot of respect for Greek life. Personally, at the time, I didn't understand it because I was like, nah, I don't want to pay for friends. I like the parties and the music. That's cool, but if you want to kick it with me, let's do it. Yeah. If not, don't do it.
I was straight me for me.
Yeah. That was my life. And I've got some really good friends that are Greek, and they're super cool. Kind of made me wish I would have done it, but you know, neither here nor there.
Yeah, there are moments where I see stuff. I'm like,
Did
Tammy pledge?
Nah, I don't think so. I know if she did, she's not like an active member of anything anymore.
Okay,
Renee is alpha, so alpha sweetheart.
Oh, I was so, like, what?
Alpha sweetheart.
Okay,
so whenever alpha anything pops up, it's like, just walk out the room now. I don't. Doing all her calls and her
Greek.
Steps and all that
Greek.
Stuff. Yeah, yeah. It's like, whatever.
She's a Zeta, so.
I don't know. But yeah,
was going Zeta.
Yeah, shout out Z5B.
Yeah, she wanted to be a Zeta. But at her college, at her university, I don't think they were established there at that time. So she was just not going to do anything. And her longtime friend, I think some of her longtime friends and one of her brothers that she hung out with, was alpha, and she ended up hanging out with them a lot. And basically, going Greek, that's what really pushed her through. You know, her first semester, she didn't do the best because it's like, oh, I'm in college now, I'm gonna play, I want to do what I want. And her friends, who were all Greek, they really stepped up and say, no, sweetheart, listen, you can't do this.
A lot of positives, man.
And yeah, education. First, they stayed on top of her. They got her grades up. Next semester, she was able to go right back to her university. She maintained, I think it was a 3.85 all the way through top of her class. And being Greek, still to this day, she accredits that with pushing her through. Because if it wasn't for her family, her Greek family, having her back and supporting her in study sessions. And no, we're not going out tonight. Listen, we got to hit these books. If my grade's not dropping, your grade's not dropping, and making pacts with each other just, you know, to uplift one another and empower one another, she wouldn't have made it through the way she did.
It's a little warm in here.
Maybe if I'd have joined Greek, I would have finished school. So
maybe. Yeah, there's a lot of positives to the
all
Greek.
You Greeks, I'm mad at y'all.
So that brings us into this next topic, because we've had this conversation a few times, and like we said, both of us have not finished college.
Mm-hmm.
And in today's society, it seems like you need a degree, though you do have those rare individuals like ourselves,
mm-hmm.
who, though you do not have a college degree, you have plenty of other skills. And because you don't have a college degree, that does not mean that you are not educated. So here we are, three men who are professional men of color,
right.
who work in corporate settings,
right.
and we have found a way to excel at what we do and continue to climb that corporate ladder because we found a way. We had our wits about us. You know, we had different skills. So with that said, you know, as us being professional men of color, how does a black man in today's America, moreover, a professional man of color, how do you empower yourselves as well as one another to be the same?
When you say the same, what do you mean?
Like, well, as a professional man of color, how do we empower ourselves and one another?
Oh,
say it like that.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So I think college is a really good thing, number one. College degrees are great. The setting and the environment that allows you to mix and mingle with other cultures that you will someday find yourselves working alongside or for is a good establishment. But if you notice, the turn that our world has taken is, I think either Google or Yahoo has recently removed the criteria for having a college degree on their job applications. I try to stay relevant in what we do in technology. I try to use my God-given talents, which is people and communication and just seeing someone being better, right? My job, actually, I think what I do well is motivate. If I had to sum it up in one small word, I think I'm great at motivating you. You tell me your idea. I mean, I think you can do it. I think it's fantastic. I think you got the skill set for it. I think you got the talent for it. My sister came back from a women's conference maybe last year, and it was Joyce Meyer. And something she said was so profound to me. And it was essentially something like this. I'll try to regurgitate it. I may screw it up, but here it goes. Essentially, she said, if you're not able to see your best friend with exactly what you want and be extremely happy for them, you'll never get it yourself. And so there's a lot of selfishness that has to be removed for us to push and continue to move forward, which, thank God, I don't really have. I want to see people doing what it is they want to do. Like, I love, and one of the reasons why I came on the show is I love to see people doing exactly what they want to do. This podcast is a passion for you guys, and I love it. I want to be a part of it. I want to say, man, you know, you're doing a fantastic job. Keep doing it. Don't let somebody change your mind about doing it. My wife was a hairdresser, and her story is, you know, from like when I was a little girl, I knew I wanted to do it. And she marched through every step of the road to get there, to own her own salon. And I was like, man, that is phenomenal, in my opinion. In my opinion. I am extremely passionate about people that have passion about things. So I continue to try to light that fire under them, continue to try to be a positive message in their ear and just push them forward, man. Because whatever I want, I'll get eventually. I'm not sold out. I'm not the guy that says I want to be CEO. If I ever become CEO, it'll be by happenstance.
Okay.
It won't be because I was pining away in somebody's office or stepping on other people to climb the corporate ladder. And my story is such that, man, everything I've gotten so far has just been by the grace of God. I mean, surely I took some technical and trade classes. I was Cisco certified for a number of years as a network engineer. I did work, but I didn't work like I want to just beat you out of your job. I work like this is just what I want.
Yeah.
And I want to help whoever wants to come along, either get in front of me, alongside of me, or wherever. And that's just kind of how I see life, though. I'm not a... That's probably why I never went into sales. I think there's a lot of money in sales.
Mm-hmm.
I'd love to have it, but I think there's a grind that goes along with it. I don't think I'm prepared for. And typically that grind is I've got to beat somebody else out.
You got to put somebody else down and lift yourself up.
I remember watching a commercial, and it was funny to me, but it was essentially, I got to want to eat your face. I mean, and that's me. That's comical, right? Yeah. I'm like, wow, that's a lot, in my opinion. That's just me, though. And my dad would say, son, it takes all kinds of people to make the world go around. So maybe my nest in life isn't, you know, to be a multi-billionaire and run. Maybe it is, though, to run different companies. But the way I'll get there will be whatever way I carve out. It won't be, you know, stepping on anybody or pushing somebody down. And I think that's a lot of the reason why we can't get ahead as African-American men. I don't know why that is. We have this, but it's a mentality, and it's difficult to break.
Yeah, it's this mentality that there's not enough success for all of us.
Yeah, it's,
you know, if you get success, that's that much less success there is for me.
That is the craziest thing to me.
I gotta get there first.
Yeah, you know, it's just the wild thing.
Or you're going to eat all the food.
Yeah, and I don't agree with that. And so one of the reasons why I like the friendship, the camaraderie, and now the family figure that I found in Jared is the mutual respect.
Got real soft in here.
Yeah. The mutual respect. I don't think we've ever gotten to the point where it was like, well, I want what he has, or, you know, he wants
That's
what I have.
That's hard to find, man.
And it's like, what can we do to mutually empower one another? What can we do to help each other grow? What can we do to help each other get to the next level? It's like, oh, well, I got a promotion. You know what? I'm genuinely happy for you. You know, like, what did you do? Like, can you help me you know, sort of guide me. Can you train me on this? Sure. Can I can train you on this, you know, and just always having that open dialogue. And we, even to this point, we talk at work all day. And if I need help with a technical issue or a technical question, or if I just need mental or emotional support, like I can reach out and vice versa. And it's like, I feel like a lot of men shy away from that type of relationship because they feel like they're just by themselves. And what, I forget who said it, no man is an island. You know, you can't do it all by yourself. You have to let somebody in. So I'm forever thankful and changed by the friendship that we've been able to develop.
The other thing that's at the core of your friendship, believe it or not, is love.
Yeah.
And lots of men don't understand that it's okay to love another brother, right? Because the word admiration is another word for love. If you admire what he does and he admires what you do, that means you have love for one another.
Yeah.
And you, it's difficult to get ahead without love, man. And if you do it, oftentimes I find you'll lose it because it's not genuine. It wasn't never meant to stay. I used to, my friends would tease me because they said I would, you know, yeah, he's in touch. I'd tell him, man, I call up. Sometimes I would have days I just call my boys and say, hey, man, I really love you. I appreciate you. And I want you to know before you go in the grave. I don't want to be standing on your grave thinking this guy didn't know how much I really cared about him and what he meant to me and my family. So I tell my boys, just I'll get a wild hair and call him. Hey, man, I love you. Hope your day's good. You know, holler at me if you need something.
Yeah.
Because that's missing. You know, we all so hard, so tough.
Yeah.
And it's okay to be tough. But men, I mean, in the Bible, God talks about love. He's actually talking about the love that we should have for other brothers, right? The women, that was so separate, but for some reason, well, I know what, we don't study it, number one, and we don't sit under somebody that can teach it to us that we respect, and it leaves a lot of us lost. I mean, just completely lost into thinking that I'm soft if I love this dude or I care about him and his family. Why would you not care about him and his family?
Exactly.
Why would you want to see harm come to him? I would jump in front of whatever I could if I saw Jared's daughter about to get in some trouble. Just, that doesn't, that's just the wrong mentality to have. And it pains me to see most men have superficial relationships with other men. Yeah. And it's all about what they, because my other boy got a, he had a real nice car, so we're going to hang tonight. But if he got, and my, I would say you find out who your real boys are when you don't have nothing and they got something. Do they still come around?
Yeah.
Are they still lifting you up? You know, are they still inviting you to places, willing to fit the bill just because you're down and out? And the vice versa. I mean, I've had my boy Darren, shout out to my boy D. Brandley. He's been up and been down, but he's always been my boy. I never once ever felt he was jealous of anything I had. And now, you know, he's got his own business, you know, doing automotive stuff. But it pains me to see it. Pains me to see it. And this young culture is, it's a whole other story. But if you've got love and you understand how it works, then you wouldn't be afraid, you know, of other men. You know what I'm saying? It doesn't make any sense.
And that's, you know, it's funny that we were saying all of this because I loved rap. Like, I loved being a rapper. Like, I like to rap. I love the music. And I really, at one point, thought that was like, that's my calling. That's what I'm supposed to be doing. I'm a grind. I'm going to do this. And I had, you know, I had my team and we were moving. And I think I realized I didn't want to do it anymore when I couldn't enjoy the music anymore because I was competing against everybody. If I was listening to a song, I was listening to it to find what I could have done better and how I could outdo this guy on this. Like, everything became a competition, and it stopped being fun. I couldn't be a fan. I lost all enjoyment for it. And the great thing I love about this podcast is, one, I got a partner like Rich, and we just, you know, it's no competition. It's no, you know, it's me versus you. You know, it's just what can we do? You know, we don't even... You saw how it was. We don't even really discuss what we're going to talk about. We just,
we want it to be genuine.
And then we just get on here and we start talking.
But we want it to be genuine.
You know, and in the podcast community, is so dope because there's like these pods in color hashtag groups. And it's a lot of like black podcasters. And the big slogan right now is we all win. Like, there's no comp. It's not like we're fighting for listeners. It's, you know, my show is dope, and I think your show is dope. So I'm going to tell my fan, if you think I'm dope, you might think they're dope, too.
Like,
and that's all we do. Everybody trying to, you know.
That's an awesome slogan.
We all win. That's what it is. We all win.
Yeah.
You know.
Love that.
So yeah, I really love that about this. And this is what's making me think, like, this podcast thing, like, more and more things are happening to say, like, this might be that direction you're supposed to go in. Like, this might be something that you were supposed to do. Because I'm just having a ball. I'm having the greatest time of my life doing this. I feel like it's making me a better person. You know, like, even reaching out to you to be on the show was something that the flan from 2 or 3 years ago wouldn't have done. Like, I wouldn't have wanted to make that connection. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't have felt confident enough to make that connection. You know, you would have been here and I wouldn't have been able to be myself. But now all of a sudden, you know, I can do it. I can say, all right, I'm dead serious about this. You know, when we getting you on the show, let's set the time. You put it on the calendar. Boom. You know. And then you can get here and it's the same show. We just be the same people.
Man, I tell you what, I've got this vision of myself, and I've always thought I would be in front of millions of people, either on some kind of stage or whatever. And I don't know what the platform looks like. I don't know if I'm a preacher or a pastor or just someone talking or a podcaster or just sharing. I have no idea. But even now when I'm sitting here with you guys, I think, wow, this is actually a segue into that. Yeah. You know, you just never know how you'll get to your goal, but God will give you visions of what that look like, which is, I'm really, thankful for.
And that's what, when I look at this, like, I have no idea. Like, this was just an idea.
You just don't know.
We had an idea, and we just decided that the only thing that separates us from the people that we look at, you know, on TV or the people that we look at as being successful is that they had an idea, and they pursued it.
They had action behind it.
Gave it legs,
So all we had to do was we took this idea and we said we're going to do it.
Ran with it.
And I don't know where it's going to go. It could fail, you know, but we've learned so much in this project that if it does fail, we just take that knowledge to the next one and go a little bit further. I don't know that this is going to be the end all of what I'm supposed to do, but it definitely feels like I'm headed in the right direction.
I agree with that.
So, But to wrap it all, you know, to wrap it all up.
No,
to wrap it all up.
So this is what it's always about. It's a natural, organic conversation. This is what we strive for. So
I think as professional men, the thing we can do to empower each other is erase sort of like the mystique of success. Like, I think a lot of black men think success can only be found in certain avenues. You know, to be viewed as successful, you either got to be in business, you got to be a doctor, a lawyer, you got to be a basketball player, a rapper, a musician, a DJ. You know, you got to be in one of these areas and you got to have these status symbols to show that you're successful.
Mm-hmm.
And there's just so many. And that's one of the benefits of college. I didn't finish college, but one of the things I learned in college was there's so many jobs I never thought was a job.
Yeah, for sure.
So anything that you want to do, you know, there's probably a way to make a career out of that.
Right.
So you don't have to look at what you've seen other people do. You can have a completely new, you know, concept, a completely new idea, and that can still be the thing that makes you successful. You don't have to try to follow a road that someone else has already followed. You can just, as long as you, like you said, as long as you have something you're passionate about and you start moving in that direction and you keep moving, I think you can find success. And I think that'll encourage more, because some people, if I thought I had to do IT for the rest of my life, I don't know if I made it.
Yeah, and the crazy thing is, I genuinely love IT. I love information technology.
I love technology.
Especially that last part, technology. Like, I love, I'm the biggest tech geek there is. We talk about gadgets all day long, phones, networking, laptops, computers, any and every gadget. We're both in the process of turning both of our places into smart homes. So we got all types of electronics all over the place. I love this stuff. Not so much that first part having to do with customer service. And it's not that I hate customer service. As you get to the point where you don't necessarily want to continue to service people, but you want to do something to sort of support and grow your own brand.
Mm-hmm.
I don't mind putting in the work. I'll talk to people all day. But if I'm going to be doing this level of work, I want to do it for something that's going to be mine, that I'm going to own, that's going to give something back to my family and my community personally, and not keep lining someone else's pockets. So when you think about it in that aspect, then you go in and somebody says, my monitor is not working, and it turns out because it wasn't plugged in. It's like, why am I doing this? Why am I plugging your monitor in? It doesn't help. Whereas if it's my store and I'm like, well, this is how you tell that your monitor is not plugged in. You know what I mean? So it's sort of just a change in the mentality. So I'm not checked out, but I'm just trying to think of ways that I can we can grow our brand and we can do more to connect with people, but connecting with people for the right reasons, not just because I'm here to get a check, but genuinely because we want to love to be here for people, because we want to do this for ourselves and our family and things like that.
Yeah, so essentially what you're saying is a means to an end.
Yes.
And I don't think there's anything wrong with working hard wherever you are. And I remember I moved to Austin 2011. And people would always ask me, hey, man, do you miss Dallas? And so I learned, and my response used to be, like, no, I miss a few things. But what I realized was I had to learn to enjoy where I was mm-hmm. while I was there.
Yeah.
You won't always be where you are. And so I think but it's important, though, in my opinion, it's important for us as African-American men or women in the workplace to always do our best and try to remember it's a means to an ends. Try to remember I've got passion for plugging this person's monitor in, because at some point, maybe in 2 years, 5 years, 10 years, I'll have to deal with a customer that I may not want to that day, but I'll have this to fall back on. My mm-hmm. sister's in a position where she wants to do a different job, and the people on, you know, where she is have changed, for a lack of better terms. And I try to encourage her to just still continue to be you.
Mm-hmm.
Continue to be reliable. Continue to be positive. Continue to be energetic. Continue to have passion. Don't let the circumstances rob you of those things, because someone will always try to pin it back on you and say, "Well, you know, he changed because
yeah, make you this good." Yeah,
bingo. And so you don't want to give anybody that opportunity, mm-hmm.
yeah.
right? Don't and it's okay to continue to stack your knowledge for the thing you want to put yourself really into, but do it in such a way that you remain professional mm-hmm. and tactful for where you are, because you never know how that business might change. Mm-hmm. You may be the one servicing this big company that you used to work for, right? Mm-hmm. It may be the so-and-so organization, and you're the owner now. You're coming to visit, and you're like, oh man, I remember you used to, you know. So I just encourage people to you can do both. Yeah. You can. You don't have to fall out of love with one thing and begin to let your ethic slip.
So that's one of the things that I like about this podcast, and one of our mantras, be the light.
Mm-hmm.
So I, regardless of why I'm there, I go to work with it on my mind every day. I'm going to be the light.
Yeah.
Regardless of what happens, I walk in the door with positivity, and I do my job to the best of my ability.
Absolutely.
So one of the things, and I agree with that 100%, I was raised by my grandmother, old school Southern. Don't do anything half-assed. Mm-hmm. And as a man in the workforce in general, but moreover a black man,
can't do it.
You know, all you have is your word, and all you have is your work ethic.
Mm-hmm.
So I never, go back on my word, and I never try to let my work ethic slip, because at the end of the day, you do 100 good things and people forget about it. You do one bad thing,
absolutely,
they bring it up right away. So I try never to let my work ethic slip.
Yeah, and that's just part of life. I mean, mm-hmm. but and the things I hold on to are, so I was out of work for 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
I was evicted. My car was repossessed. Literally didn't have anywhere to go. For some reason, I just felt like any day could be my day. And for the first year, I actually looked for work, and all I got was no's. But I had the same attitude every day, like, this could be the day. And my friends were like, man, how do you stay so positive? I said, well, any day could be that day. You just never know. Yeah. You just don't know. And through that time, man, I traveled. I was on a TV show called The Good Guys. I was cast as a full-time extra SWAT officer. Crazy, man. My life is a trip, man. It really is. I got to keep my apartment with no job. I washed cars. I used to detail cars. I just never stopped believing that any day could be my day.
Yeah.
And that's how I am today.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, no matter what's next, you know, I just feel like any day could be my day. So I can't afford to take a day off mentally. Off.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah, of course I got days where I just don't feel like going.
Yeah.
And I tell you what, all the things that are happening in society right now for African Americans, it is hard for me to watch that stuff on the news and then go to work. It's hard for me to know that there is a race of people in this world that genuinely don't like us, because of what we look like.
And see, that's part of the reason. Mind. That's part of the reason why I go to work.
Blows
because,
my mind.
Because looking at all of that and seeing how people feel about me and knowing that I work with a large number of people who feel that way, strengthens my resolve. Because now I want to go to work every day just to prove that we're not all this stereotype that you may think we are and that you may feel that I am.
Right.
This is not me. I'm going to show you who I am on a regular basis, on a daily basis, what my work ethic is, what my background is, what my beliefs are, and what I stand for. Because you're not going to take this away from me.
It's hard, man.
Yeah, it's, I don't know. Like, okay, so two things. One, I'm going to segue into another, another topic. And I wish I could be as positive as you. I don't, like, I'm listening to him like that, you know. I don't feel like that. I don't feel like that at all. Like, I really don't. I've lost the enjoyment for what I do professionally right now. Like,
okay.
I don't have the passion for it anymore. It is very difficult to work up the motivation to go in there and to do the job. I find myself, like, my wife will tell you, like, I look at life during the work week on a day by day. I can't think more than 24 hours ahead of where I am. Because it's like, how do I make it to Tuesday? Okay, how do I make it to Wednesday?
Wow.
All right, how do I make it Thursday? And then I come home on the weekend. Saturday might be a good day. And then Sunday is the countdown until Monday.
You sound like my mom.
And I'm right back in it again. I'm searching for that level of any day could be my day. Or, you know, I'm searching for that thing to hold on to while I'm there to keep me. Because that's what I get. I think that's why I left the job that I worked with you and Caesar.
All
right.
It's all good.
It's all good. We've done it. We've done it too many times already. Mm-hmm. But was that I didn't like who I was when I was there. Like, I didn't like how I felt about myself. I didn't like the work ethic I had while I was there. I didn't like the person I was becoming while I was there. So I had to move on and find something different to do. And that's part of why I searched out, you know, this podcast. We talk about things happening, you know, for a reason. Like, I think the DWI was probably the best thing to ever happen in my life. Just, you know, refocusing me, being completely sober for a year. It's been a year on Monday. Being completely sober for a year. You know, on those times I was bored or something, and I probably would have, you know, had a couple beers, a couple shots or something. I come in here and I work on the podcast. And I've seen something grow, and I've experienced that joy of creation again. Mm-hmm. I have that thing, you know, here in the house. Mm-hmm. And that's my any day could be. Like, every day I wake up and I'm looking at the plays. Like, this could be the day I open up SoundCloud and we hit 1,000 plays in a day or something that. And I focus and I work toward that, like, feverishly. I wish I could find that same thing from a regular job. I'm working on it, though. I'm work in progress.
You don't have to. It's not for everyone. Just be you, man.
Yeah.
The good news is you do have something that drives a positive reaction from you. And then maybe
my daughter.
That too. I tell my mom has this problem all the time. I tell her to try to change her focus, though. Like, maybe if you looked at work a different way, right? Sometimes it's all about our focus, you know. You can take on glasses, put them on, and change your focus of what you're looking at. But anyway, you got two things. I'm sorry.
All right, so mothers. One, my mother would go to work every morning. She would drive. She was a school teacher, and she would drive me to school and then go to her school. And every morning, she'd be in the car. I love my job. I love my job. I love my job. Like, that's how she psyched herself up to go to work every day. Like, she just had to say it 100 times before she walked in there. And she had to say it until she believed it and then go in there and do the job. But the other thing, my mother is going to be here in a couple weeks. We're going to have her on the show. She desperately wants to be on the show because I made the statement on this show that the biggest racist I know is my mother.
Nice.
And she wants to defend herself. So what my mother is helping me see is, and I heard this on the radio about something else today, that that whole, because I think we had the discussion, that whole idea that black people can't be racist, I was against that. Like, I didn't agree that black people can't be racist. And now I'm starting to turn in that direction because I'm hearing people's definition of racism as like having that dislike of another race and having the power to deprive someone of something or act on it. So I think black people, when they say they can't be racist, is because they feel like they don't have the power. They're not in a position of power to oppress somebody, so therefore they can't be racist. But I think that's only half the statement. Maybe you can't be racist, but you can be prejudiced.
Highly prejudiced and prejudiced, very stereotypical.
And prejudice to me is racism without power. I guess in my mother's case, my mother's defense is that she doesn't dislike white people. She just prefers her own. So she would never do anything to harm a white person. And part of me says that may be true. And the other part of me says you just never had the opportunity. Like, you just never been in a position where you could. Maybe that prejudice would kick in. So I'd be interested to get your thoughts on that whole, like, black racism. Can we be racist? What's prejudice? How does all this work?
I think we can. There's everything from microaggressions to macroaggressions. But you defined Webster's version of it, which is based on race and also having the power to withhold something of significance. But I think there are some things in our world that will always be. I think racism is one of them, because there's going to be people. Yeah. I remember, and it actually happened where we used to work, all three of us together, and I'll just leave it at that. I remember one of the customer guys, very high up in the food chain, he asked me one day, he said, Ness, aka Caesar, can you guarantee me there'll be no more human error? And I'm such a smart ass. My wife will tell you that, my mom, my dad, I don't care what setting you put me in, I'm always a smart ass. And I said to him plainly, can you guarantee me there'll be no more people working here? And he didn't like that, of course. And he just kind of stared at me like I didn't say it. And I just stared back like, I did say it. But essentially, we're going to have that. But while I'm here, what can I do to make it better? It's kind of what I think about. I do my best not to, I don't know where I get it from, but I still do. I don't worry about things I cannot control.
Yeah.
Cannot control who's in the White House now. So I'm not going to spend, you guys will say two Fs, two fucks, but I'm not going to spend a lot of time debating why he should or shouldn't be there, or is he the best person? He's what we've got now, so I'm going to work with that. I'm going to take my wife and my family and enjoy our friends and our family, and I'll vote again in 4 years. But I just don't spend a lot of time on things I can't control. Can't control another human. I can through my own actions, like, you so eloquently put it, earlier by saying I'm going to come to work and be the best person I can be, so that when you want to think about how African Americans treated you or what we do, what we say, you'll remember, oh man, but I had this one guy I used to work with.
Exactly.
He was never that way. So I think the empowerment to that is, what can I do in the arena that I'm in? It's going to exist. Ignorance is going to exist. People are going to educate themselves on top of mountains without ever being involved in large metropolitan areas and cultural differences, so they won't get a feel for what it's like to go down to 6th Street or West Austin and have a piece of pie. So it's just going to always be different. So to rid racism is something I'm not really interested in. Too big of a piece for me, maybe. But to change your mind on how you think about African-American people is absolutely what I'm interested in. And what can I do to change that? Now, if you I'm not a killer, but don't push me. I'm still a man first.
Yeah.
And I will defend everything I love and care about to the death. So I think you can be racist. I think you can be, and essentially what you're being is ignorant. And so I think as long as we have education and non-education, you can always be ignorant, right? And then the choice to educate yourselves. And because sometimes it's a choice.
Yeah.
There are things that we might disagree or agree on. Like, I think love is a choice. You actually have to choose to accept another human with all their flaws. Like, you guys have a friendship. There are things about each other that you may or may not like and dislike, but the things that you
naughty
do
toddies.
Far outweigh.
You're not going to let me leave that one down.
Far outweigh good. What you do love. You know what I'm saying? And so that is the decision to love in spite of, which people that that are racist don't have. They just won't accept, won't open up their hearts to do so. So I think it's a lot of envious if you look at the news and the TV now, I mean, everybody wants to do what we do. Everybody wants to be our color. Everybody wants to be our build. Everybody wants to have our fashion. They want to have our swag. I mean,
until the police pull up.
Until they want everything but our credit. unless you got good credit. But the world is such a crazy place, man. And as long as there's people, it's going to be just as crazy.
So how do you, as a new father, like that's the thing that's killing me right now. Like I feel like I'm struggling to figure out how to exist in this world. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Like the world has changed so much, and there's so much you can't say and so much you can't do, and things that you have to be tolerant of, and new mm-hmm. stuff. And just every day is something new. Like I said, I'm struggling to figure out how to exist in this world, how to be me and not offend anybody, or how to fit in. Mm-hmm. And I just worry all the time about like, how do I impart my values on my daughter, but then make her open enough.
Yeah,
to accept. I don't know.
That was a great question. When it was on pocket, we hadn't touched on it yet. But yeah. As a new father, how do you feel? I'm scared to death. Let's be real. Yeah. I said it earlier, and I don't know if you caught it, but I really believe life is lived in community, and to me, that's my safety net, which is I don't have to do it alone.
Okay.
I don't have to have all the answers. You guys know Ali is a really good friend of mine. Small example: him and his mom and dad were at our house for dinner. And I was his mom was asking me, you know, what are you most excited about being a dad? I said, well, I'm really excited about not having to do it alone. So Ali is an angler. He loves fishing. I just don't know enough about fishing, but I'm excited for the day to come where I can say, hey, Bo, your uncle Ali is going to take you fishing today. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. And that's on a small scale, but that's just how I feel about life. Because if you go back to how you were raised, definitely how I was raised and how you were raised, you got a set of rules and regulations at your own home, but you knew for a fact you couldn't go down the street and break those rules and regulations, even if your folks weren't around, because big mama, great auntie, whoever was going to be right there saying, now, you know you don't do that around here. Life was lived in community then.
Yeah.
We took responsibility for each other. We don't do that anymore. And so new fathers and mothers are left feeling like you feeling. I'm barely fitting in. How do I impart wisdom so my daughter can not only fit in, but exist
and thrive?
Yeah.
And the truth of the matter is, you don't have to do it by yourself. You get yourself a group, whether that's church, whether that's just your friends. But when I pray at night, I pray for my community as a whole, my neighbors, right? Because they're there with me. I'm watching their homes when they're not around. They're watching mine. You know, our kids are growing up together or whatever. But that's the only saving grace I have. Like, my mom and my dad are still around. My wife's family is still around, and luckily for me, she's got, you know, a ton of brothers and sisters, and so like I get to ship Bo somewhere to learn how to wrestle, to learn how to, you know, water ski or whatever that they all do.
Yeah.
But I think like that. I don't think like this is all on me, because man, in the hospital, I think you might have told me this, but it was so I literally cried and wept when we got into our own room and he was with us, because I was like, what do I do, God? Because I have no idea. Mm-hmm. I have zero experience as a father.
Yeah.
Half an inch of experience as a husband. and even that's suspect if you want to just keep it 100. But I love her and I love Bo. But all he said to me was community. Yeah. And everybody at our church has kind of rallied around us. Her mom came to stay for a few weeks. But that's kind of how I get through that. Because I still don't have a clue. I'm just being real.
That was the craziest moment for me, because it's like, So much builds up to the birth, to delivery, and then you survive delivery. Like, I barely survived delivery, and then you look up. It's like, well, now that was not the work. Like, that was the
saying, we're gonna check you guys out and you can go home. I'm thinking, what do we do when we get there?
Yeah,
like, are y'all gonna come home with us?
Like, y'all are real trusting. You gonna send us home? You gonna let us take this? Okay.
But to my core, I believe that life is lived like this, right? Why should I go home and shut myself off with just me and my wife and my son, away from family and friends that are going through exactly what I'm going through, and we could be going through it together and working through it together and having each other's back together? It just doesn't make any sense to me.
All right, because my Segway game is on 100 right now. It's on 1,000. I'm about to Segway again. 100,000 million. So we talk about community, and then you mentioned the election earlier, and and this is the big thing. I really this is one of the reasons I really wanted to have you on the show, because you know, when I didn't know you, and you were just Caesar, the guy in the blue suits with the orange socks that I didn't like. you know, I didn't know as much about you, but now that I've gotten to know you a little bit outside of work, one of the things I know about you is you're a man of God. I see you involved in your church. I see you involved in the youth. Yeah. One of the dopest things was that the video you did for the Super Bowl party, man, that was dope. I don't know why you had that Packer jersey on, but
I'm not a big jersey guy. I don't wear them and I don't buy them. That's all my wife had, so I had to wear it.
But going piggybacking off of that, you know, I know you're a man of God and mm-hmm. you believe in this community, and part of this podcast for me is being involved in that community. And what happened, where I felt I failed my community, was prior to the election. I heard, you know, some of this rhetoric from youth, what Rich will say. Rich will call them the millennials. And, is you know, I heard some of this rhetoric about, you know, not participating in the process and votes not counting. And Rich was the one that taught me this lesson. Like, things don't bother you until they affect you directly.
Absolutely.
And so I heard stuff.
Yeah, that's something I say every day. People don't change. People don't react until they're on the cusp.
Yeah, until it affects you directly. Yeah. So I heard this stuff, and I'm not a millennial. I ain't worried about, you know, I did have a daughter at that point. I'm losing track of time. Yeah, 18 months. But my daughter didn't vote, so I ain't had to worry about, right. I had to worry about none of that. And then, like, it did hit home. Like, my brother-in-laws, you know, were spewing that same kind of stuff, and mm-hmm. I feel like now I have to say something, and I said something a little too late. But the reaction I got from a lot of people with my comments about the election and voting was that, you know, don't put your faith in man, put your faith in God. I was like, okay, that's great. Mm-hmm. But what do we do?
It's right.
God. And I'm like, it feels like you taking a cop out. It feels like you falling back on religion as a reason to do nothing, as a reason to stand still. And I don't agree with that. And I don't feel religious enough to have the conversation with people to say, I don't want to use the words God is not enough, mm-hmm. But that's how I felt. Like, you just saying that is not enough.
Right.
So, as a man, you know, first of all, what are your thoughts on that? And what would you say to a millennial with that perspective?
I love the question. I love the perspective. And I love the opportunity to educate. I'm not a Bible thumper. I'm a man who has experienced God for himself and has definitely had some really difficult times that I know nobody else but God walked me through it. But you know, one of the things I dislike about religious people is they do things like just God, and they don't give you any play or plan or approach. And that's not of God. There's a scripture in the Bible that I really like, and it says, what man would sit down to build without first counting the costs? Essentially, how can you do anything if you're not going to plan it, right? I do believe that the justice system rests on the shoulders of God. But what that means to me, though, is I'm still active in participating in my community, doing whatever it is I can do to add value. People lose their hustle when they want to come to Christ. And I just don't believe in that, right? The same tenacity that you had when you were looking for a job as a non-saved person is the same tenacity you should have when you're looking for a job as a saved person, right? God was always found doing something, whether it was healing, saving, baptizing, feeding, or teaching. He's never not found doing something. But typical Christians or people that are religious want to sit back and say, well, just believe. Okay, that's good, and I do have faith, but I've got to have action behind my faith. To me, faith is like a workout regimen. You guys both know that you can't lose weight unless you get in motion.
Yeah.
You can say, I believe in whatever product you believe in all you want, but if you start eating donuts, you're not going to go nowhere. That's the same with Christ.
That's my problem now.
It was so crazy, donuts. Man. I'm going to invite you guys out. Saturday morning, this past, every third Saturday we do men's gathering. But man, I was just thinking about how when you come to Christ, or you when you give your life to God, or you become a Christian, you don't all of a sudden become this super changed person. You go back to your own home where you may or may not have marital issues. You go to that same lame ass job that you may or may not love. But what do you do different? What's different about you, right? And the answer is, every day something's growing inside of me that's changing the way I see life. Whether it's something spiritual, whether it's something I learned from reading the Bible, whether it's now that I know that when I die, I'm going to heaven instead of hell. Whether it's I've got a new family that I can, a bunch of men I can talk to that are probably going, that have gone through what I'm going through, that I can say, hey man, would you mind if you and I just broke bread and had a conversation about how you dealt with infidelity in your marriage? Oh, absolutely, brother. Let's do that. To me, religion is knowing where I go after death, and also it's a set of guidelines for how I'm supposed to live my life, which is essentially with integrity, loving my neighbor, putting them before myself. One of God's biggest commandments is putting your neighbor before yourself. How difficult is that? That's just for regular people, yeah. Let alone saved people. But the thought that someone just uses the word God and says, let's just believe, that's too difficult for me. Because I realized just in my 44 years that you have to have action behind anything, saved or unsaved.
Yeah.
And that's a difficulty I have with people that are saved not really giving you the whole story. And the whole story is, God was a man about, he was a man of action. He was a soldier. He was a fighter. I mean, there's nothing he was never not doing. You can't read anywhere in the Bible where he was just chilling somewhere. Because he was always en route to help somebody, coming from helping somebody. So in my opinion, it is action. It's activity. And what's that old saying about a body's in motion, stay in motion. Yeah. A body at rest will stay at rest. You know, you can have a Bible sitting on your chest, sleep on the couch all day, but that don't mean you're going to heaven.
Very true.
You know, and people make Christianity and life in Christ this scary thing. Like, I can't drink no more. I can't curse anymore. I can't watch a crazy movie. I can't have a disagreement with my wife. I can't get angry. I can't have emotion. That is all BS. That is not the God we serve. Everyone he saved, they had real issues. Woman with the blood, the blind people, the lepers, the lame. I mean, it's regular folk like you and I. And the other thing I love about God, he didn't come to church. He was healing people on the street.
Yeah,
he was in the hood. He wasn't in what's a nice part of town in Austin. He wasn't in Westlake.
Zilker Park.
He wasn't in Zilker Park handing out cookies and he was where people were hurting, right? And he that's not always church.
Yeah,
I do go to church on Sundays and I love the church. I love getting the word because I think the pastor preaches from the Bible with very little ad lib. I love that about our church. But I'm not stupid. If God were coming, he wouldn't be there. He gonna be where people are hurt at, where they're sick, where they need him. And so for me, I want to be where we're needed. I mean, and if this past election hurt us or butt hurt somebody, what can we do to change it, or how can we help? Right? How can I keep my family afloat and let them not believe that, you know, just because there's somebody else in office that we won't have what we need?
Right.
That's my job as a father, to make sure that my wife and my son feel like everything's gonna be okay. And then even if it's not, we come together as a family at the end of the day. We're saying our prayers or doing whatever. That hey, you know, we may not make it out of this one, may not make it out of this one, but the good news is we'll go to heaven. So that's my thought on all that. I just people don't tell the whole story. And to me, church is not this grandiose thing that doesn't accept people that have problems. That's where everybody should be instead of problem. But they get hurt. I understand it.
Right. It bothered me because I'm not a, like I said, I'm not an extremely religious person. And, you know, like I was telling you before we started recording, like I'm one of those, you know, spiritual people. But like to me, if you're going to take something away from somebody, if you're gonna get in a public forum and say you shouldn't do that,
right?
Well, then you got to give me what I should do.
Of course.
Yeah, you got to. Man, again, people, I swear this is one of the dopest conversations I've ever had, had the pleasure of being a part of. So I'm going to pause it there again. We still got plenty more audio. We may move to another series for the next episode because we got a lot of guests coming on. But don't think this is the last of our conversations with Ness. So as always, be the light, stay tuned, and peace.